All right, how's it going, everyone? Welcome once again to another edition of the A10 Talk Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Sam Basil, joined alongside Daniel Frank and a great recurring member of A10 Talk and the A10 Talk Podcast, Chris Pyle. How are you guys doing tonight?
Yo, what is up?
Doing great. This is kind of all the voice you're going to get from me tonight. I just got back from the Mason Bonnet game, screamed my absolute lungs out, had a great time. Mason's in second place in the Atlantic 10. I'm ready to talk some A10 hoops.
Yeah, you know what? That might as well be where we start tonight. I mean, it's been a pretty crazy night in the A10 so far. Some big results, and we've got another one, another big game about to finish as we record this. As we speak, VCU is currently leading Davidson 67-58 with about 3 minutes left to go in the game. But you know, by the time we finish. We get later recording in the night, that game will be over, so we can talk about it. But first, let's talk about the biggest major upset of the night tonight, being George Mason beating St. Bonaventure at home 75-66 to go 3-1 in A10 play. They won their first home game in conference play, and now they're second in the A10 standings. Anybody who was watching the game on ESPN Plus probably saw Daniel in the student section, you know, going absolutely nuts. So, Daniel, could you kind of talk about the atmosphere that was going on in the gym as Mason secured that win?
You know, it was electric tonight. I mean, the crowd wasn't as big as I think it could have been. And I don't know how much of that is COVID, if you're keeping folks home or not or whatnot. But, and also it's a Wednesday night in D.C. But, I mean, the folks that were there, I give a lot of credit to the students. I mean, you know, it's been this ongoing battle at Mason for years to get students to stand during games, and the athletic department finally bought into it and they got signs telling students to stand up. They gave gift cards away to a couple of students who were standing up and, you know, just incentivizing to, you know, really give as much of a home court advantage to Mason as I can. And I think it honestly made a difference today. I mean, as Mason was kind of rolling through this, I got off to like a 9-0 start. The Bonnies looked a little rattled. Credit them though, that the Bonnies came back and they made it a 4-point game at the half, and then Mason kind of delivered another punch to start the second half, and Bonnet came back, cut it down to 4, and then Mason kind of hit 2 knockdown threes in their face heading into the under 4 timeout, and kind of, you know, did what they had to do down the stretch to close it out. And I give a lot of credit to Kim English. That's a tremendous win for George Mason tonight.
Yeah, you know, I got to tune in probably from the end of the first half, like probably like 3 minutes left in the first half, all the way into the end of the game. And it really seemed like every time Bonna got some semblance of a run, George Mason just knocked down 2 consecutive threes and just kept it right back, you know, into an almost double-digit game. If you look at the box score, I mean, this is a career night for so many guys on the Mason roster. As a team, they shot 46%. From three-point range, 52% from the field overall. 4 guys in double digits. Daniel, could you talk about the night that Deshaun Schwartz had? 20 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists. I mean, you know, how would you evaluate, like, what did you like from him tonight?
I liked the confidence that he played with. And, I mean, he was that kind of the Iron Man of the night. He played 39 minutes. He played more than anyone else on Mason's roster tonight. You know, he was efficient in his scoring. I mean, 7-12 from the field's not terrible, and 5-9 from 3 really isn't bad. There was, you know, 1 or 2 shots that, you know, maybe were a little ill-advised, but when you're feeling it and you're taking confident shots, I don't think any coach is really going to get on you for that. And it was kind of interesting. There was this discussion going on I was having post-game with, you know, some of the Giant Killer guys about who was the player of the game, because as great of a night as Schwartz had, I think you got to give a lot of credit to Davon Cooper as well. He hit, you know, some really timely shots. And I think that's really been what Mason has been missing just in their key to success recently, is being able to hit those timely shots. When the Bonnies had their runs, Mason could quell that really quickly, just hit a 3 to respond. And they were able to do that tonight. And Cooper had a couple of those as well. I think that really, I give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of, you know, talking about, you know, what went down for the benefit of the Patriots, kind of, What's been going on lately to the detriment of the Bonnies, that, you know, I feel like we've talked about amongst each other here at A10 Talk. I've definitely looked into it myself. Chris, I'm sure you've seen this too. I mean, tonight, St. Bonaventure, I mean, you know, George Mason did not really reach into their bench that well tonight either, might I add. They only had 19 bench points. in the entire game. But St. Bonaventure, 14 total bench points from the St. Bonnie's bench. And, you know, Jaren Holmes, Dominic Welch, both recorded 40 minutes total tonight. So they basically did not leave the floor the entire night. And if you look, I was looking the other day, if you look at probably like the top 50 leaders in the country in minutes per game, the St. Bonaventure starting lineup for, yeah, oh, sorry, bench minutes. That's what I'm talking about, bench minutes, not points. If you're looking at total minutes per game, top 50 players, 4 out of 5 of St. Bonaventure starters are in that top 50. I think 3 out of 5 are in that top 20. So, I mean, when you guys, for you guys who've been watching St. Bonaventure this season, what do you think it is that makes Mark Schmidt so afraid to, you know, reach deep into his rotation?
I don't know. I can't really speak that much to it other than, I mean, I've watched this group of guys for, you know, last 4 years, but the one thing that I keep thinking of is he kind of, I don't know. This group of guys are like, they've done it before, you know, where they've basically had no bench. They're kind of the guy, like if they're in a tight game down the stretch, I don't know. I don't think Mark Schmidt really has any choice but to use those guys, you know, like it's just, that's the way it has to be. But if they're up, then he can obviously use the bench a little bit, which is really weird because in their win against VCU, those guys, they played almost the entire game. Cause I'm going to pull up that game here really quick. And if you, Jalen Attaway played all 40 minutes, Lofton and Holmes played all but 2 and 3 minutes. Oshun played 36 minutes. Welch played 34 minutes. And that was a game they won by 20. And they were up by at least 20 or 18 in those final like 4 minutes. And, you know, I get it. You want to preserve a lead. You're going with what's going well. But those are the minutes that you can get your guys on the floor. And I don't know what it is. It's got to be some sort of trust issues that he has. And I don't know. He's a reigning coach of the year for a reason. I'm not going to speculate too much, but it's more like, to me, it's got to be like a confidence thing where he's got, you know, he just has to trust his guys and those are his guys, you know?
Yeah. I think you bring up a good point. I mean, those guys have been on that team for such a long time. They've obviously taken so much time to get to know each other, to get to know Coach Schmidt, for Coach Schmidt to get to know those guys. But I mean, when you look around the A-10, you look at the rest of the top teams in the conference, they've all got guys that get really reliable bench minutes. I mean, you look at Richmond, you look at Davidson, and they reach really deep into their rotation. So, I mean, going forward, I mean, don't you think that could be kind of like the Achilles heel to St. Bonaventure? And honestly, you know, I think after tonight, like, could that be the reason why their at-large bids are, you know, pretty much dashed?
Okay, don't want to go off the Bonnet talk, but Davidson is down 18 seconds left. They have the ball, okay? This is live podcasting. This is podcasting. It's – oh, no! Luca called for the offensive foul. Oh, no. Oh, God. Sorry. That's just like, I'm listening to everything that's going on here, but I'm also looking at my TV and I'm like, okay, Davidson's creeping back into this game. And then it's down by 2, and then they're down by 1. And I'm like, okay, but oh, man.
I'm about 10 seconds behind you, I think, on the stream. I think it's a good call, man. The offensive foul, but.
I don't know. They didn't show a replay on that. They're going to have to foul. Yeah. Oh, my Lord. But yeah. dude, that's podcasting at its finest. And I hope you take notes of that for the future. that's a flop job. That is a flop a roozy. Oh, my Lord. That is a flop job like none other. Oh, good Lord in heaven.
This has got to make the final cut.
Oh, it will. It will.
That is a flop job by – is that Sam Ward? Yeah, give me a break. I mean
– it's Williams.
It was Vince Williams? Okay, so, yeah, his arm was a little bit outstretched. I will say that. That's probably going to get the call every time. But oh my Lord, that looked like a flop job. I'm gonna let PD know while I'm that's a flop job. Yeah, the Bonna bench, man. There, it's just not, nothing's gonna change. Like Dayton kind of proved that point too. The other, what was it, last week? Like they're just not gonna use their bench, especially if they're down. Like they have to use their guys. I don't know, and I don't know what it is. And you know, Dayton provided kind of that blueprint, I thought, and Mason kind of followed it. You know, like Mason's playing 3 games in 5 nights here, so they're gonna have to use that bench. You know, Mason kind of knew that tonight too, so they put in Ronnie Polite. You know, some guys are gonna just have to get into the game, and you know, Mark Schmidt's gonna have to figure that out, or they're gonna be kind of maybe out of the top four. I don't know.
VCU just got the stop. And there's going to line with 0.3 seconds left. VCU looks like it's going to pull it out and pull the upset tonight.
Yeah, what I've got right now is Ace Baldwin just made a first free throw, and it's 70-68. VCU with 13 seconds left. I don't know if you guys are a bit ahead of mine.
Oh, I'm ahead of you. I got 0.3 seconds left.
Oh, wow. What's the final score, 70-68?
They're still shooting free throws, but there's 0.3 seconds left, so it's not – it's over, basically.
Yeah. So before we get into the implications of that game, let's just finish up with Bonner real quick. So with that loss to George Mason tonight, you know, most bracketologies around the country have St. Bonaventure, you know, maybe in the first four out, maybe like next four out territory, depending on, you know, Joe Lunardi's kind of had them floating around back and forth for a long time now. Is this it for them? Are their at-large bids done?
For Bonna, you think?
Yeah.
Bonna, no, because if you really, believe it or not, Mason on the road is a quad two loss. Okay. It's really not that bad, but their margins are so slim. Like they got a great win against Marquette. They got a great win and they're all neutral against Clemson. They got a great home win against VCU. That's going to turn out to be very, very good. You know, after this game that's going on right now, but it's not dead yet, but they really need to rack up wins. Cause I'm going to pull up their schedule here. They go home, they got St. Joe's, and then they got Davidson at home, which it's not going to be quad one for them, but Davidson at home, that's, you know, they got to win that. It's going to be a quad two. They got to improve the resume somehow. Richmond on the road is going to be quad two. Fordham at home will be quad three. They got St. Louis both home and away, so there's a quad one in there. They got VCU on the road, that's probably a quad one. So, you know, they got some opportunities. It's just they are a landmine away from just being out of it. And honestly, they can't even lose to St. Joe's, who's 150 in KenPom. Like they really can't. They can't lose to those 100 teams anymore. You know, and plus the home game against St. Joe's coming up, that's a quad three probably. So, yeah, there's no more room for error for this team. They got to rack up pretty much the wins the rest of the way, or they're toast.
I'm going to disagree with you, Chris. I think
bring it on. Let's go.
I think, well, the number one reason why I'm going to disagree with you is I think their net ranking is going to kill them. I couldn't tell you why their net ranking has been so low. They've been below George Mason for a number of weeks now, which is incredibly bizarre to me as both a Mason. Well, maybe not now, but certainly you can make the argument a week or two ago that it was very bizarre. Realistically, for an Atlantic 10 team to get an at-large bid, I think you absolutely have to be top 100 in the net ranking. And I know that's an arbitrary threshold to set, but I think that's been true of every single at-large bid from the Atlantic 10 since I switched from the RPI to the net, that they've been a top 100 team. Unless the Bonnies pull off a miracle and go basically undefeated and can crack back into the top 100, I think they might be toast.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd have to agree with you, Daniel, because I feel like Bon has been really – I just think people really, you know, are ready to count Bon out, and they're ready to kind of push them out of those rankings. I mean, especially with the way that Bon has been losing these games. So I just think it's going to have to be a situation where, you know, depending on where everything stands tonight, you know, Davidson gets that at-large bid, and then all these other teams are going to have to be, you know, jockeying for the tournament championship. But, you know, speaking of Davidson, let's move into this just finished game right now. So final score out of Davidson, 70-68 VCU. VCU improves to 4-2 in conference play. 5-2 in conference play. Davidson now 6-1, ending their 15 game winning streak. Correct. Their first loss since like mid to late November. First off, let's talk about in terms of implications. What does this mean for VCU? I mean, I know Chris, I just saw you just put out on Twitter, VCU, welcome to the bubble. Are they in the last four in, or are they in that first four out territory?
I have no idea, man. I just know that that's a win that gets you on the bubble because it's a quad one win. Yeah, let's pull up VCU real quick. They're 66, and that's before this win. It's gonna catapult them. They might get 60 or top 60. So that'll put them 2-2 in the quad one. They're still 1-3 in quad two and 4-1 in that quad three. So I'm guessing that one quad three loss was probably Wagner. I'm guessing. The Wagner at home that they lost earlier. So that probably makes up for that. But the committee definitely will excuse a quad three loss. It's fine. And Wagner's pretty good. So yeah, VCU's probably on the bubble. They're probably looking more at that like last four out. But, you know, there's going to be some jamokes somewhere that's going to put them, you know, last four in, or they're now like a 10 seed because of this, or, you know, it is what it is right now. But they're definitely very bubblicious right now.
And so Davidson, you know, they're in their first week in the first week in the top 25, you know, are they out? And, you know, where do they now stand in terms of bid talks? I mean, are they still an at-large team?
I think they're pretty clearly, at least in my book, this is their first loss, as you said, since November. I think for every Atlantic 10 team, the margin of error is pretty thin right now. That being said, I don't think Davidson is completely out of the field right now. I think they're still in the field.
They're still in the field. They were pretty much projected almost even on Bracket Matrix, who, if you don't want to watch, for anyone out there who, if you don't believe Lenardi or Jerry Palm or whoever is making a bracket out there, Bracket Matrix is the best. And if you don't know anything about Bracket Matrix, they basically take all the bracketologists from all over the internetosphere and they average out everyone's picks. And basically every single year they have every single pick right. It might not be the right seed, but they at least get the at-large teams right. Which is honestly more important to everyone else. Like, I don't really care if my team's Dayton. I mean, Mace, look at Daniel. Would you care if Mason was a 10 or 11 seed? No, you just want him in the tournament, right?
Of course.
So exactly. So, they had Davidson as a 9 seed, which is firmly in the field. So if anything, I don't know if this even changes their seed line because VCU is a good team. They're kind of on the bubble. They're the second best net team in the Atlantic 10 at 66, or actually third best. St. Louis is actually 65, my mistake. So, it doesn't really do anything for Davidson, I think. Maybe they move down a spot in that 9, or if anything, they move to that like 10, that first 10 spot. But if there's a game to lose for them, which it clearly they were bound to lose a game. They're not the 2020 Dayton Flyers. They were going to lose a game. But if there's a game you have to lose, it's this one and it's fine.
Yeah. And so looking ahead, I mean, who on VCU's schedule is really someone who, you know, can help them, you know, continue to make that push. I mean, I feel like Richmond on Sunday is going to be a huge game for them as well. I mean, do you think they have a chance of pulling that one off too?
I would say I think they have a pretty good chance. I mean, Richmond's been incredibly inconsistent. They had a really weird game against Rhode Island the other night where they got down, they came back, it was back and forth, weird game of really big swings. Just kind of scrolling through the schedule, I mean, VCU's going to get Dayton at home. They're going to get George Mason twice, if we're not talking about George Mason as possibly being a nice win. And then the last two games of the season are home against St. Bonaventure and at St. Louis. So, I mean, assuming VCU does what they're supposed to do, they don't drop, you know, they'll probably lose a couple in there. You know, they could afford one loss to a Richmond, I think, because they played Richmond twice. You know, just don't go losing to, like, you know, UMass or LaSalle or whatever. Though they don't have to play LaSalle again, I don't believe. You know, I think VCU is at least in a position to make an argument for themselves, which is, I mean, you know, for an 11-6 team right now or 12-6, as long as they keep winning, you're doing yourself a favor by at least giving yourself the opportunity to be in that conversation.
Yeah, with VCU, you know, what's funny, they only have one quad one game left on their schedule, and it is at St. Louis. Dayton's not going to be a quad one game at home. Richmond is only 90 in the net. You got to be 75 if you're an away opponent. Same thing at, where was I going with that? George Mason, like they're not going to be close to that 75 mark on the net. So those are nice quad two wins. Even Dayton, Dayton at home is probably going to be a quad three home game. And that sucks because they know how hard that Dayton game was that they pulled out earlier this season. So honestly, man, they got like the middle of the pack and down left on their schedule. Besides even the St. Bonaventure game at home, St. Bonaventure at home might end up being a quad three game. Like that's nuts to think about. And that really sucks too. So they definitely need to win that St. Louis game on the road, and they got to win those quad two. You know, it can drop a quad two here and there, but they definitely cannot lose like to Rhode Island at home, to Duquesne at home, to Fordham on the road. Like, you know how it is. Don't lose a landmine and win the games that are going to put you in the tournament, right?
Well, how weird is it too that we might be saying it's worse right now to lose to Rhode Island than it is to Fordham?
Yeah.
Because there's an argument to be made there.
Yeah, because they got to go. Yeah, they got to go on the road at Fordham. Where's Fordham at? They're weird. 171. So if they could potentially be a quad two game, I don't know.
In Russell Gym, they'd be a quad two game. That's huge.
Let me see. I can't remember the table that well. Let's see. Quad two on the road to 135. Ah, no.
Just missed it.
They're down. They're down a couple, about 40 points, 40 spots. So not close, but
well, that it would be
a, it's a quad three. Fordham is no longer a quad four game on any venue. That is a win.
Hey, Fordham's got time to move up, though. That game's not to the 15th, so Fordham can pull a miracle out of their hats and move up some magical number of spaces.
They could. You're right.
Here on the A10 Talk Pod, could. We find any way possible to make any fact about Fordham over
Fordham. Optimism is always aplenty.
Yeah. but speaking of that Rhode Island team, if you know, you say that a loss to that Rhode Island team might be worse than a loss to Fordham right now. And, you know, it's crazy for me to think that, but I mean, I can't really disagree with you. What do you think has been going on with Rhode Island this year, you guys? I mean, you know, is it Coach Cox? Like, could we see him, you know, possibly, you know, being replaced at the end of the season?
It's weird. I mean, that game they had against GW was a weird game. I mean,
yeah.
GW is a weird team too in of itself right now, given they beat Mason. Now, granted, there's the extenuating circumstances of Mason didn't have Josh Oduro first game after the COVID pause, all the excuses we can make for Mason if we want to.
They still played a great game, though. George Washington.
They did. They did.
You watch that game, like, they were on fire that game.
And then they lost a close one to St. Joe's, but then they came back and you know, beat Rhodey on the road. And that was a weird game too, because they got down like 18-2 or something. Rhodey was like, had their foot on their necks basically. And then just basically let up and let GW basically eat their lunch the whole second half. I mean, I was kind of, as a GW fan, sitting there waiting for it to go awry, and it never did. I mean, it's not even, I was waiting for GW to take you know, to fold as much as I was just waiting for Rhodey to just, you know, hit some shots and be Rhodey, you know, go to the Mitchell brothers and get some buckets. And I mean, they were basically non-factors, both of them, the whole game. And, you know, this is the GW team was that was shorthanded, didn't have Ricky Lindo Jr. And yet GW basically just did what they wanted in the second half. It was really weird.
And against Richmond, I mean, that was even worse of a loss. I mean, let me pull up that score real quick.
That win percentage graph is crazy.
Yeah. Sorry, let me get that one up here.
70-63.
Okay, so I mean, a 7-point loss is not too bad, but I mean, after leading 39-26 at half, I mean, being outscored 44-24. It's a bad look. Like, if you didn't watch the game and you look at the scoreline, you go, okay, they lost by 7 points. Like, not good, but not terrible. But man, they really blew that one. And I just felt like Rhodey Twitter was just, you know, all over the place. I mean, the only guys that were in double digits were Mikal Mitchell and Liggett. So, like, you had four guys in double digits, but I mean, you know, their starting rotation, like, really did not put in the work in that game. Is it just time for Rhodey to kind of, you know, just move on and you know, start that next chapter?
So basically, I've looked a little bit into David Cox, and you know what's really interesting, and is Rhode Island, as he's been in control, this is his fourth year. He started in 19. They have a chance to this year to be under 500 in conference play for the third time in 4 years under David Cox. They were 9-9 his first year. They had that really nice year in 2020. That doesn't count for anything. They would finish 13-5 in conference. Last year they finished 7-10, which I know COVID shortened, but they still got 17 games, and now they are 3-3. And if you look at the rest of their schedule, they still have to play Dayton. They still have to play VCU, Dayton, Davidson. Oh, Dayton again. St. Bonaventure on the road. Dayton on the road. St. Louis and St. Joe's on the road is actually really tough. So they have a gauntlet of a schedule left. And I really don't know if they're going to finish over 500. KenPom has them as a 9-8 record to finish. And that's also not including rescheduled games. So, yeah, they might finish under 500 in conference for the third time in 4 years under Cox. He is definitely on the hot seat for this team.
You know, Cox is in the hot seat. I mean, is there anybody else that you could see? I mean, I know it's hard to say. I mean, because, I mean, we're not really one of those conferences where schools can, you know, afford to get guys in and out super quickly. I mean, you know, we've talked about Keith Dambrot. You know, he's in the fifth year of 7 on his contract. But, I mean, do we see the coaching carousel spinning pretty fast this offseason in the A-10?
I think the number one guy who's in my opinion, almost certainly has to be gone is Matt McCall from UMass. I mean, yeah, they got their second win tonight, but that was against a LaSalle team, which is bottom of the conference pretty comfortably, in my opinion. I mean, so UMass is 2-5. Yeah, they had that weird win over SLU, and then they followed it up like 3 days later by dropping like 20-odd point game to SLU, I think it was. I mean, unless UMass, I think, has some big resurgence here in the latter half of the season, this basically seemed to be a show-me, prove-me year that Matt McCall deserved more time at UMass, and the results are not going in his favor right now, I would say.
Yeah, and they barely got away from that game, you know, against LaSalle. You know, they had to come back from a 10-point halftime deficit. But, you know, with McCall, aside from the record, I mean, do you think the departure – I mean, I feel like the departure of Trey Mitchell from UMass to Texas, I mean, you know, take what you will. I mean, guys will – anytime they have the talent, they'll try to go to a larger program, a power five program. Like, there's not much – you can do with that. But I mean, I feel like when we were talking about it, when it was going on, it really seemed like the reason why Trey Mitchell was leaving this program was because there was a lot of contention in that locker room. So do you think that's going to be like when Matt McCall leaves UMass, is his lasting legacy going to be that's the guy that lost Trey Mitchell?
It very well could be. I mean, it's it's interesting to kind of compare it to George Mason and how Kim English recruited Josh Oduro and how that was such a huge part of when Kim English came in. That was the guy he had to keep. He had to find a way to keep Josh Oduro. And it's even different with McCall because this is a kid that he presumably recruited himself and, or, you know, his coaching staff, but, you know, same difference. And Trey didn't feel compelled to stay. And frankly, I'm surprised, you know, there was speculation after Trey Mitchell's first year that he was going to leave UMass. And then he stuck around, I think, for a sophomore season, if I'm not mistaken. And then he left after a sophomore year. I mean, this was not something that just kind of crept up after, you know, overnight. This was a multiple year, like, when is Trey Mitchell going to leave? It was even if it was a when.
Here's Matt McCall's lasting legacy at UMass. So far, if he got fired right now, he would finish his UMass career 9-39 on the road with 3 wins against LaSalle. And that's total, not just A-10, total road games. Wow. That's his legacy. He is a terrible road coach, which is really weird because he was actually a really good coach at Chattanooga. It's just crazy what's happened at UMass with him. But he's not the only guy, dude. I really think there's at least 6 guys on the hot seat in this season. You ready for it?
Hit us up.
All right, Matt McCall, Jamie and Christian easily. Okay, those are the top 2 guys, right? Then you got Keith Dambrot. Okay, I know that short story, Duquesne really likes him. The fans really like him, but they're going nowhere with him. And it's year 5, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, let's see. It's year 5. Yep. Then you have David Cox. We talked about it before. Chris Mooney. And then you have Ashley Howard at LaSalle. Those are the 6 that I have firmly on my hot seat. The other one, we could go 7, but I've kind of taken a step back a little bit, and that's Billy Lang at St. Joe's, just because I'm looking at it today, and because someone asked me that question on the A-10 talk thing, and I answered, you know, with 6 guys, because I named them off in my head, and I go, you know, does Billy Lang deserve it? Like, his team sucks, but let's really look at the numbers, okay? If you look at it, yes, his team is under 500. His team, his first year, though, was ranked on KenPom at the end of the year was 260. Awful, right? Okay, let's go to 2021. They ended up at 202, okay? 58-point jump. Like, that's really, really good improvement, even though the team was 5-15, plus it was a COVID year. So, you know, whatever. But then this year, right now, oh, it just changed. They're at 149. 149, that's a huge jump. So, like, the team is definitely improving. I just don't know if, you know, they're going to look at that and be like, well, the team's improving, so we got to give them another shot. Or they're like, this is not what St. Joe's basketball is about. See ya. So I'm going to say Billy Lang is lukewarm, you know, but they are definitely improving metrically.
Yeah, well, with a program like St. Joe's, I mean, St. Joe's is tough, right? Because I feel like the last decade or so in the A-10, like, they haven't been, like, too hot, but they've really got some, like, they're probably one of the better teams in the conference in terms of, like, you know, overall history. So even though they are on an upward trend, I mean, next – say Lang stays for one more year, right? And next season, you know, say they finish, like – 8-10 in conference play. They're three and five right now. So I think that's a fair assessment. They finished 8-10 in conference play. What's a, like, if you're a St. Joe's fan, what is a sufficient conference play record next season for you to want to keep Billy Lang?
Probably over 500, right? Like, yeah. If they go, like you said, it's 8-10, it's got to be over 500.
But is it 10-8, or is it, like, you know, 13-5, you know,
like, I don't see St. Joe's going 13-5.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not, but I'm just saying, is it like a winning record, or is it a winning record and then some?
I think it's going to depend a lot of it on where they are this season. And Chris brings up a great point about their KenPom stats going the right direction, which is certainly not the case for the other six coaches that he also just listed off as well. But I think St. Joe's needs to at least hit the 500 threshold. I don't think they're going to hit it this year. The 3-5 right now. I think, you know, 8-10 is about right, probably, for where they're going to end up this year. They gave Mason a game on Monday night, which I give him credit for. You know, they beat GW, which may or may not say anything because no one knows anything about anything anymore because the A-10's drunk and I love it. But I think St. Joe's has at least got to hit the 500 threshold, maybe one game over. But the thing is, I just don't see it being realistic that they're going to get more than two. I mean, even two games over 500 next year seems like really a reach for this team, unless they bring in some real talent in the transfer portal this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
I'm not going to say that like their team is going to be like really good, but like they're improving. Like, and the thing is, like, I just listed off just their rank, but I'm looking at like everything else. Okay. So effective field goal percentage, that's a big deal in college basketball, especially over the past like 4 or 5 years, especially since Dayton was number one a couple years ago. I think Davidson's like top 15. Like, it's a big deal. Like, even though it's not anywhere near the top 100, like, their first season with him, 303. Second year, 240. This year, 156. Even their adjusted defensive efficiency, like their first year, they were awful. 315, one of the worst defensive teams in college basketball. Last year, even really bad, but 230, like almost increasing by almost 100 spots. This year, they're 153. Like, they're increasing by a lot. They're improving a lot every year. And I know it's probably not where St. Joe's needs to be, especially since over all those years under Martelli, they won a couple A-10 tourney titles. They went to the tournament. You know, they've had draft picks, which they have another one right there in Jordan Hall. You know, he's going to get another year, and it's going to be a year where they're like, okay, like, you have increased your, basically, like, your spot in KenPom. Like, let's just say, you know, it goes another 50 spots next year. Like, that's top 100. And that's a good team. So, you know, they're going to give them another year because, you know, all the numbers project that everything's, you know, working well. It's just, you know, it just takes time, and at a school like St. Joe's, and, you know, 4 years is probably not a lot to ask.
I wouldn't say so at all. I mean, you know, like, if you're a St. Joe's fan, I mean, I guess we just kind of say be patient. But, you know, in terms of winning now, Chris, you know, I feel like I saved this for a little bit later in the podcast. Let's talk about your Dayton Flyers and their performance on Tuesday. You know, from a Fordham fan's perspective, it wasn't the worst loss. It was definitely frustrating. I mean, it's definitely frustrating losing four games in a row. But, you know, for a team that lost their leading scorer, their next best player has been out for two games in a row with injury. You know, Fordham's really working with the best they can. As a Dayton fan, and as, you know, with a team that was, you know, at, you know, full strength, was this a win that Dayton fans could be, you know, to, you know, hang their hat on it and be really happy with?
I mean, you're always going to be happy with a win at the end of the day, right? I think everyone's kind of just like, we'll take it, you know, because it was a 7-point win. Most fans that are not as in tune with A-10 basketball just assume that Fordham is coming in ready to take a 20-point drubbing, right? But a lot of people don't realize that this is not your father's Fordham anymore. And they're actually a decent team. And the thing is, Dayton right now has one of the best defenses in college basketball right now. But as far as defensive efficiency, they're number one in the A-10 right now, just above VCU. They're going to focus a lot on defense. And I think for what that's worth, their only weakness is 3-point shooting, which is where Fordham tried to capitalize, because they're kind of playing smaller right now without Chuba. You can clearly see it. Like, they're just putting like one big guy down there and putting three shooting guards and a point guard in there and seeing how many threes you can make. They shot 31 threes. They made 12 of them for 38.7%. And on most nights, that can be a way to win. But, you know, they also, Fordham also turned Dayton over 18 times. Dayton got a little lackadaisical down the stretch, even up by double digits. And that's why the game ended up being, you know, a 7-point win. We weren't too happy with how the, you know, they kind of like walked to the finish line, if you will. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a conference game. You know, these teams see you every year. They kind of have good scouting reports by the time they see you based off of, the 10 to 15 games you've already played. So, you know, teams are going to be able to adjust to you. And Kyle Neptune definitely did that. And, you know, Fordham definitely looked underhanded in that game, but they held their own by shooting threes and doing what Dayton kind of struggles to do, and that's defend the three. So give them some credit. They'll definitely build on that, but hey, Dayton will take it, and they're 5-2 in conference.
Yeah, and so you mentioned those 18 turnovers for Dayton. It seems like turnovers have kind of been Dayton's like biggest, I wouldn't really say like Achilles heel, but you know, like when I've been looking at Dayton box scores recently, and I'm like, wow, they've been turning the ball over a lot. You know, is that something that worries you going forward, or do you think that's just, you know, this young roster, you know, still trying to iron out the kinks a little bit?
It's both, man. They're young. I get it. But at some point, like, you got to take the training wheels off because they're playing big boy basketball. And at this point, it's really frustrating because they, in conference play, they are last in the league in non-steal turnover percentage. So what does that mean? They are literally taking the ball and dropping it on the out-of-bounds line and handing it to the official. That is literally what's happening. Like, it's incredible, like, how they just throw the ball away and shoot themselves in the foot, like, almost every single game. Now, I will say, against Bonaventure, against Duquesne, and St. Louis, they limited those turnovers. I think they only had, in the St. Bonaventure game, they only had 9 turnovers. In the Duquesne game, they only had, 10 turnovers. So, like, yeah, that's a little bit too much. But for this team, from 18, you know, from 10 to 18, that's a lot. And that takes up a lot of, that's 8 possessions, you know? So I'm a little worried because, you know, they're kind of getting sloppy. But you know, when they don't turn the ball over, they're a really effective offense. So, you know, and plus this year, we're not really playing for much except for maybe for 3 days in DC. So, I mean, if anything, we're learning for next year because, you know, there's no at large for Dayton this year.
But you know what? I mean, those 3 days in DC, I mean, I feel like the way we've been talking could, you know, really get some serious results from Dayton. I mean, Dayton fans really, you don't really think Dayton fans really are, you know, not expecting, but, you know, thinking about the possibility of being a tournament team this year. I mean, I guess when you're a Dayton fan over these last couple of years, like, it's always been a possibility. I mean, you guys are always kind of on that cusp, but I mean, are Dayton fans kind of getting ready to, you know, just wait and see how this team develops?
They definitely are. I think we've seen what this team is right now. It's just like, they're going to be tenacious on defense, and they're going to be either hot or cold on offense that on a particular night. But the fan base is definitely excited. I think they just want to get to DC, frankly, because number one, it's a neutral, like, fans can go, it's a neutral site game, you know? And we brought literally the house to Orlando, and look what happened there, man. I think if it was like a true road game kind of thing, you know, it's tough for them because they don't have that fan support. Like we saw, you know, with George Mason, but neutral site games, Dayton gets a lot of fan support. So I think the fans, especially me, are excited about that opportunity. As long as we can get, you know, that first round or the double bye, you know, per se, you know, we've already proven we can win three games in 3 days. So we're really looking forward to kind of having that opportunity because we know we can do it. It's just, you know, we got to get hot at the right time and get all the fan support out there, you know.
Definitely. So a lot of good stuff, you know, in the short term and long term future for Dayton. And before we get into what you know, kind of our picks for this weekend slate, Daniel, I kind of wanted to go over some crazy stuff that was going on over on the women's side of things. I think you might know what I'm talking about, in the fact that Fordham held St. Joe's to 35 points tonight. 55-35 at the Rose Hill Gym. In the second quarter, St. Joe's scored just 2 points. They scored 8 points in the first quarter. So 10 points going into halftime. Daniel, I mean, what do you think happened there?
It's been a crazy week just in general on the women's side for the Atlantic 10 Conference. I mean, you highlight Fordham's defense has been elite. I think this has been a trend for Stephanie Gately's teams for a number of years now. Fordham isn't going to win by outscoring you just purely offensively. Fordham only averages, I want to say, like 45, 50 points a game, I want to say. Like, they're not exactly lighting up. That's never been their recipe for success. Fordham has always been an elite defensive team, and they've shown it for years now. And I think you get a team like St. Joe's that's kind of struggling to find their offense, and that's the prime suspect for Fordham to really take advantage of and have a really bizarre scoreline like you had tonight. But I think in addition just to that, I mean, it's been a really weird week in just across the Atlantic 10. UMass is completely nosedived. They've now lost to Rhode Island twice in a week, and UMass is now 3-3. Rhode Island and Dayton are starting to run away with this a little bit. They're both 6-0. Fordham's a little bit behind at 5-2. That Fordham-Dayton game was a doozy on Sunday where, you know, Dayton was down, I want to say, like 18 points in the fourth quarter and came back and won by one at home against Fordham. That was a crazy game. And St. Bonaventure, you know, has won two games. Yeah, that one was over Mason, which hurts me to say is, you know, not exactly saying a whole lot at the moment. But, you know, then they went and beat LaSalle, who is still sitting in fourth place. You know, they beat them earlier tonight. And just been a crazy week on the women's side, and, you know, just as entertaining on the men's as it's been on the men's side. It's going to be a fun end of the season here for the women.
Yeah. And so before we get to that end of the season, though, we've got a pretty big slate. Funny enough, it's just one of those points in the season where the men's schedule and the women's schedule line up. So we've got no games on Thursday, and for the women's side, no games on Friday either. And just one game on Friday for the men's, which is Rhode Island at Dayton. So for you guys, I mean, you know, give me as many picks as you want. I mean, what games should anybody watching the A-10 look out for this weekend?
Well, I think certainly Friday 10 this week is going to be a lot of fun, as it always is. You got Dayton hosting Rhode Island. We've talked about, you know, both these teams tonight a fair amount. We talked about Dayton just a minute ago, and we talked about Rhode Island kind of their up and down. And, you know, I think Rhode Island has to be looking for a statement kind of win, you know, or what else are they looking for right now? I mean, after the weird loss to GW and then they blew it against Richmond, I mean, you got to think they're hungry. And on the flip side, Dayton has had an interesting week themselves with the loss to George Mason and then the win against Fordham. You know, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. I think Saturday, the game of the day is Richmond VCU, especially the conversation we had earlier about VCU. You know, if they're inching into the bubble conversation, that's got to be a win for them. And then Sunday, there's a couple games I want to highlight over on the women's side, as long as I can throw that in here.
Yeah, please do.
You've got Rhode Island hosting VCU on CBS Sports Network, if I'm not mistaken. Rhode Island is 6-0 right now. VCU is kind of having a weird up and down season. They've been a bit inconsistent. But if you've not had the opportunity to watch this Rhode Island team yet, they're going to be on national television, and they are a dandy of a team to watch. And then second one I want to throw out there just to see, because I think it has a possibility to possibly be an upset. Dayton's going on the road to Davidson. And Davidson's been a bit of an up and down team this season themselves. But they've really shown the ability to have some really good shooting performances and really knock down some threes. And I think, you know, it's going to be some weird matchups and mismatches, I think, on who's guarding who. But on the road at Davidson and Belk Arena, I think Dayton could be on upset alert. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
A lot of great stuff. And Chris, what are you looking at this weekend?
My biggest game, since Daniel kind of touched them all, I'll be at Friday 10, Dayton. So, you won't see me though. I'd sit up in the nosebleeds, but, my biggest one is George Mason. So, I know Mason fans are riding high. They should, 3-1 in conference is cool. The thing is, I'm excited for them. The thing is, the last three games have been at home, and they have been really good at home this year. They only have one loss at home. I think they're like 8-1 if tonight makes it 9-1 at home, but they're 2-6 away from Eagle Bank Arena. So including that loss to George Washington, I know they didn't have Josh Roduro, but they still shouldn't have lost to GW. So I'm looking for them. They play at UMass, who's been frisky. They just beat LaSalle. They beat St. Louis at home. And St. Louis is a very good team too. So if George Mason wants to be taken seriously as a top four contender, and dare I say I'm not even going to say a title contender. We're not going to go there yet. We'll take it one step at a time with them. I don't want to get Daniel too excited. He'll be up all night. If they want to be taken serious as like a top four contender in this league, they need to win on the road in conference play. And it starts at UMass on Sunday.
It's funny. There's two things I want to just touch on that you mentioned. Mason's has a very bizarre record. Their two road wins at Maryland and at Georgia. Those are the two road wins they have this season. Oof. Which neither of them look super amazing in hindsight. Maryland's obviously had a weird season, but Georgia just beat Alabama. I mean, you know, obviously Georgia's not good this season, but it's weird that that's their two road wins that they do have. And the other thing I just want to throw out there, Mason and UMass historically, especially at the Mullen Center, have had some dandy games. I mean, last year, I believe, was the double or triple overtime game. That like the game lasted like 3.5 hours or something crazy. Like Mason and UMass have some recent history of some amazing, you know, close finishes. So that's just going to be interesting, I think, from a storyline perspective as well.
And speaking of Georgia, I mean, I don't know if you've got a chance to watch a lot of Georgia basketball this season. And I mean, I don't know, it's hard to say. I mean, feel free to argue with me, but I feel like Tom Crean, you know, in like about 10 years ago, I mean, he had established himself as probably one of the best coaches in the country. But I mean, seeing what's going on with this Georgia team, I saw them in person back in November, I think, at the Prudential Center. No, it was December, excuse me, at the Prudential Center. And that was, in terms of Power Five basketball, that was probably one of the worst showings I've seen out of a Power Five team. But you know what? A win against an SEC team is still a win against an SEC team. But I mean, that's just my two cents on Georgia basketball. But I mean, for me, I mean, it's hard to pick a game that you guys haven't already touched on. I mean, of course I'll be watching Fordham, George Washington. I think that'll be a great way for Fordham to break their, I'm not going to say it's a guaranteed win for Fordham, because nothing is a guaranteed win in the A-10. I do think if Joe Bamsil could have another great performance, that he might give Fordham some trouble. But if there's any game that I think Fordham can snap this losing streak and kind of right the ship, it's going to be against George Washington. Otherwise, I mean, I guess I'll be checking out, you know, VCU Richmond. I mean, you always got a little battle between the two in-state, in-city teams. I think, you know, we need to foster those local A-10 rivalries a bit more. But I mean, other than that, I mean, I think we've got a pretty good slate. And so, you know, if you want to check out updates for all of those games and everything going on in the Atlantic 10, make sure you stick to it, a10talk.com. Keep listening to the A10 Talk podcast. Follow us on Twitter. Follow myself, Daniel, Chris, and all of our great writers on Twitter. And until then, until next time, happy pooping, I guess. Have a good night, everyone.